I sincerely welcome everyone to Sri Radha Gopinath Temple Sunday Festival. Thank you for being with us. With your permission, I'd like to read a verse from the ninth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Yannama sruti matrena puman bhavati nirmalaha tasya tirata padakim va dasanam avashishyate. What is impossible for the servants of the Lord by the very hearing of his holy name, one is purified. Srimad Bhagavatam, again and again, reminds us of the supremely purifying power of the Lord's holy name. Lord Chaitanya, in his Shikshastakam, has prayed, Nam Namakari Bahudanija Sarvashaktish, that the Lord has incarnated within the transcendental sound vibration of the name. And all the powers, the potencies, the beauty and the sweetness of the Lord are in the name. Namachintamani Krishna's Chaitanya Ras Vigra. The name of God is God. Krishna, the absolute truth, who is supremely all-powerful and independent, has manifested himself in the sound of the name. And as Krishna tells us in Sri Bhagavad Gita, Yegatamam prapadyante tams tataiva bhajamyaham. According to the nature of how we approach the Lord, or according to our surrender, the Lord reveals himself accordingly. When a devotee, with humility, sincerity, in a spirit of selfless service, chants the holy name, the Lord who is all pure, Om Apavitra Apavitrova, very quickly cleanses the heart of the devotee and reveals himself within the name. This particular verse is being spoken about a great king named Ambarish, who took shelter of the Lord in the Lord's name, and therefore nothing was impossible for him. Briefly, we will discuss this story. The same story that Shukadev Goswami has spoken to Parikshit Maharaj in the pages of the Bhagavad Purana. Ambarish was a married man. He had children. He was the king of all the seven islands of the world. He had such power, such wealth, such influence, and he was respected more than anyone else in the world. But he considered his wealth, his influence, as insignificant. He had no attachment whatsoever for it. Because Ambarish Maharaj knew that material things are the sources of misery. Dukkalaya mashashrutam, because they're temporary. They will perish. And whoever we are in this world, whether we're just sweeping the street and we have a little hut and a lota, or whether we're kings who have proprietorship of the world, it really doesn't make that much difference, because no one can hold on to what they have in this world. Time takes away everything. And also, things cannot bring fulfillment to the heart, however much we have. And there's so much fear to the extent we have material attachments. If we're attached to fame, prestige, then we fear losing it. And we become envious of someone who has something more. And we become depressed if we have less. And if we have more, the tendency is we become arrogant. In which case, envy, arrogance, it's a type of greed which can never be satiated. And whether it's nature or people or just our own vulnerabilities of our body and mind, there's always fear because we can lose it. Somebody else can take it. So the predominant quality of material existence is fear. People work hard because they're afraid of not having enough. They're afraid of losing what they have. Wars are based on fear. But a devotee is fearless. How was Ambarish Maharaj fearless? Because he didn't take any of the temporary things in this world too seriously. But it's interesting to analyze his character. You would think a person who didn't take any of the wealth or riches or power or fame in this world seriously would just leave it behind and give it up. But he was the king. And he had more than anybody of all the things he didn't take seriously. But he never considered anything to be his own. He considered Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. Everything is the property of Krishna, God. And therefore he used everything in the service of Krishna. And he didn't see his subjects in the kingdom to be his subjects. He considered them to be Krishna's children, aham bija pratapita. And he considered himself to be the caretaker of Krishna's property and Krishna's children. Therefore, with deep love, respect, and compassion, he served every single citizen, human and animal and plant. He served everyone with honor on behalf of God. Therefore, he utilized everything in an incredible way. And therefore, despite having so much, he was never entangled. Savai mana Krishna padaravindayo. Very famous verse. How was Ambarish Maharaj living? Everything he had was immersed in remembering Krishna with love, with his tongue, he would speak the glories of the Lord. With his ears, he would hear the glories of the Lord. With his eyes, he would see the beautiful form of the Lord in the temple. He would see the temples. He would see holy places. With his hands, he would clean the temple. He would touch the devotees of the Lord to serve them. With his legs, he would go to holy places of pilgrimage, and he would utilize his legs to go from here and there in the service of the Lord. with his head, he would bow down to the Lord. And with all of his desires, his wealth, his power, his everything, his mind was immersed in remembering Krishna in a spirit of service. According to the bhakti tradition, this is the perfection of meditation. To meditate on God is very, very sacred, purifying. But the highest meditation on God, samsidhir haritoshanam, is to meditate on Krishna to please Krishna. Now that I have meditated and I'm remembering you, what am I going to do? I'm going to use my mind, my intelligence, and all of my physical abilities and everything I have to serve you and to please you. And therefore, Ambarish, Shukadev Goswami is praising him. Which is interesting because Shukadev Goswami was exactly the same as Ambarish and totally opposite as Ambarish. How were they opposite? Ambarish had a family and Shukadev Goswami was a brahmachari. Ambarish had beautiful palaces, beautiful clothes. He would make foods, incredible foods for the Lord and eat it with his family and distribute it. And Shukadev Goswami, he didn't have a house. He would just travel around. He would go to some cow shed to get a little milk, and he would not stay in any one place longer than it took to milk a cow. In fact, he was so totally detached, he didn't even bother to put on clothes. He wandered around naked. Not as some tradition, not as some tapasya. It's just that he was so absolutely, totally detached from the world, he just didn't think about his body or covering it. If we artificially imitate that without that realization, then we become bound by karmic reactions. So here's a king in a royal palace with a crown and the most elegant robes. And here is someone sleeping under a tree with no clothes at all. But they're exactly the same. In the sense that they were always remembering Krishna and utilizing every moment in a spirit of loving devotion to Krishna. So Shukadev Goswami is praising Ambarish Maharaj, how he used everything. And for the welfare of his whole kingdom. And also, out of his humility, thinking that he constantly needed to be purified, he would perform tapasya. And it describes his wife was equal to him in every way. She had the same consciousness. She shared the same spirit of pure, unalloyed, selfless devotion with him. So to sanctify his kingdom, the world, and help all of his citizens, as well as uplifting his own consciousness, he performed 1 year of the Ekadasi and Dwadasi fast. And at the end, he went to one of the 12 forests of Vrindavan, Madhuban. On the banks of the holy river Yamuna, he fasted for 3 nights, along with his wife. And when it was time to break that 1 year tapasya, by breaking the fast, by eating some food, at that moment, well, actually, what he did is at the end of his 1 year fast, he invited people to come. And before he ate anything, he fed thousands and thousands of people sumptuous prasad with his own hands. He gave 60 crores of cows to Brahmins, each one with gold-plated horns and silver-plated hooves. And he fed everyone such wonderful food, Krishna's prasad. First, he worshipped the deity elegantly. He dressed the deity with fine clothes and ornaments. He offered them the bhoga. He performed the aarti. And then he gave all the prasad. Massive. And just at that point, after he satisfied absolutely everyone, when it was just the time to break his fast, one more person arrived without any announcement. One of the greatest yogis and mystics in the entire universe, Durvas Muni. And Ambarish Maharaj, he's the king. Usually in the world today, whether it's in the East or the West, if a sadhu wants to see a powerful political figure, usually the sadhu has to bow down kind of to the... You have to wait in line, and the political figure does you a great favor by seeing you. But that's not the type of political figure Ambarish was. As soon as Durvas Muni came, he considered, what a great, great benediction. What a blessing the Lord sent a sadhu for me to serve. He welcomed him. He bowed down to him. He offered him a very, very beautiful sitting place. And then Ambarish Maharaj said, please, I have a wonderful feast prepared to you. Please eat. And Durvas Muni was very satisfied. But he said, I have to do my meditation in the river Yamuna. Let me take my bath. Then I will come back and I will accept whatever you offer. So Durvas Muni went to Yamuna. He was submerged in it and began to meditate on Brahman, on the Supreme Lord. And as he was meditating, he lost track of time. Meanwhile, Ambarish understood, and this was taking place in a previous yuga, where technicalities were very seriously considered in the execution of our spiritual duties. And there was hardly a single muhurta left till the deadline for him to break his fast. If he didn't break his fast, then it would nullify a whole year of tapasya and all the benefits it would give to him and all of his citizens and the whole world. But if he did break the fast, he would have been violating the etiquette that you don't eat before your guest. Especially this kind of guest. So he prayed to the Lord within his heart, and the Lord was very much within his heart, and he got an inspiration. How to resolve this apparently contradictory situation we're in. Is not this the nature of the world? We get put in these contradictory situations where we're supposed to be at two very important events at the same time, and we have to choose one or the other. And if we choose one, we will offend the other people. And if we choose the other, we'll offend these people. We want to please one person, but then you have no time for another person. This is our limitations in this world. And in order to deal with that, we need good intelligence. And that's our sadhana, connects us to the Lord. Sarvasya chaham hridisha nivishtam atasmita jnanam poshanam cha. We may not be able to please everyone, but if we have the intelligence to please Krishna in the situation, then our life is perfect. So Krishna, in the heart of Ambarish Maharaj, gave him an idea. But he didn't act independently. He approached very learned, pure-hearted Brahmins and told them, this is my idea. To drink a little bit of water is simultaneously to not eat and to eat. Drinking a little water will break my fast, but drinking the water does not consider eating before your guest. So they all said, yes, this is according to the scripture, and this is according to highest wisdom. Drink your water, O king. So he just drank a little tiny bit of water, and then stood eager to serve Durvasa Muni. Durvasa Muni came out of Yamuna, came to the house, little place. But by his mystical powers, he understood that Ambarish drank water. He was extremely offended and erupted into a tantrum of anger. You call yourself a king? You are the lowest of the low. You are a cruel, hard-hearted rascal. You have no power to control your senses. You have no respect for the Brahminical order. You have no respect for anyone. You are simply selfish. You have eaten before you feed me, your guest. You deserve to be punished in a way that you will never, ever, ever forget. After blaspheming this person who just tried to do good for him. Isn't that the way the world is? Sometimes you really try to help someone, you try to be kind to someone, but maybe you make a little mistake, or maybe you don't make a mistake. They just interpret it in a different way, and they become your enemy and try to destroy you. Durvasa Muni, besides saying the most horrible things against Durvasa, he grabbed a bunch of hair from his head and pulled it out. You have to be really angry to do something like that. Whoever you are. I guess that's why in the Brahmachari ashram it's safe. No matter how angry you may get at another Brahmachari, there's no hair to pull out. But this is real anger. And not only that, but Durvasa Muni didn't comb his hair, so it was all matted hair. So, you know, for any of you who have ever had matted hair, to pull it out, it's really an ordeal. But he could not control his wrath. He pulled out a bunch of hair, and with a mantra, with his eyes red like coals and his eyebrows in all kinds of contorted figurations, he threw the hair on the ground and chanted a mantra. From that piece of hair was born a massive demon made out of fire. He was roaring. The universe was shaking. And this demon was howling with the same anger as Durvasa Muni. It is described that what Durvasa Muni had created was this fiery demon that had the power to burn the universe. And he looked with his fire eyes at Ambarish and growled and leapt at him to burn him to ashes. All because he drank a little water. Now for most of us we'd say, my Lord, why is this happening to me? or for sure, at least we try to run away. Ambarish Maharaj did not move an inch. He did not have the slightest anxiety, repulsion, or fear in his heart. Ambarish Maharaj did not think anything ill of Durvas Muni. He simply folded his palms and offered his heart and his life to Krishna. My Lord, I'm yours. Nothing else matters. I'm yours. Because he surrendered in such a state of forgiveness instead of in such a state of love, the Lord, who promises in Gita, Kaunteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashati, for those who surrender to me, I always protect them. But he protects his devotees sometimes in ways that are not exactly what we understand as protection. He may protect us by smashing us. He may protect us by taking everything away from us. He may protect us by not giving what we want, or he may protect us by giving us everything. He may protect us by letting us die and go back to Godhead and take our soul back to Godhead, or he may protect us by saving our life miraculously. But the Lord always protects his devotee, and a devotee has faith in the Lord's will. And that was Ambarish. He just stood and just offered his heart to Krishna. And Krishna sent his Sudarshan Chakra, who appeared like fire. It was the chakra, and there was fire emanating it. It was burning hot. Now this is extraordinary what was about to happen. Durvas Muni created a fiery demon made out of raging fire that had the heat to destroy planets. And the Lord sent the Sudarshan Chakra, which was emitting fire. The Sudarshan Chakra attacked the fiery demon. And according to Srimad Bhagavatam, the fire of the Sudarshan Chakra burnt a demon of fire, burnt him to ashes. This is not only inconceivable, but incredible. How could fire burn fire? How could fire burn pure fire into ashes? Krishna did it this way just to show. What is that beautiful verse? Mare Krishna, Rake Ke, Rake Krishna, Mare Ke. That if Krishna wants to kill you, nothing can save you. And if Krishna wants to save you, nothing can kill you. And Krishna is not subjected to the laws of nature. Material nature, it's impossible for fire to burn fire. Yes? Fire is unburnable because it's burning. You put out fire with water, not with fire. Have you ever seen a fireman? There's a blazing building and they come with torches and start throwing the burning torches in the building to put out the fire. Or they come with those, you know, those fire guns, torch throwers. And people say, what are you doing? We're putting out the fire. Perpetuating the fire. They use water. But Sudarshan Chakra didn't use water. Just to show that Krishna can do anything. He has achintya shakti, inconceivable potencies. And these impossible, miraculous, inconceivable potencies are always there to protect his devotees. So after this fiery monster was burned to ashes, then Sudarshan attacked Durvasa Muni, who created this fiery monster. And Sudarshan was so red hot that it burned Ambarish Maharaj, Durvas Muni, even from a distance. So when this fiery monster approached Ambarish, what did he do? He just stood in one place and offered his heart to Krishna. When the fire of Sudarshan approached Durvas Muni, what did he do? He ran away. He really ran away. And he was a fast runner. If Durvas Muni were to go to the Kali Yuga Olympics, he would be the first person in history to win gold medal in every single event. Every sport, every race, everything. He could jump higher, he could throw balls better, he could do everything. He would be the undisputed captain of the Indian cricket team. And with no need for help from any of his teammates, he would win the gold cup every year without exception. He was a mystic. So he ran away, and Sudarshan ran after him, and when he ran, he ran. He could run. We could run on the land. He could run anywhere. It described he went to the top of mountains in the most inner recesses of mountain caves to hide. And right behind him was Sudarshan. Now here's another incredible, impossible thing by material standards. Are you ready? Thank you. Even if you said no, I would probably. Formality is here. Sudarshan was blazing on fire, yes? Durvas Muni, he used his good intelligence. What am I going to do now? He's burning my back. Durvas Muni ran to the bottom of an ocean. Now, can fire touch you at the bottom of an ocean? Yes. If it's the Sudarshan chakra. If it's the will of the Lord. He's at the bottom of an ocean to protect himself, and he feels the blazing fire heat. You know, bottom of an ocean is a very cold place. And he's feeling the massive heat of Sudarshan on his back. So he had to go out of the ocean, and he went into the sky. He was running in the sky. So fast, he went to the abode of Brahma and fell at Brahma's feet and said, please save me. I offended Vishnu's devotee and Vishnu's very angry with me. Please save me. And Brahma said, when Vishnu just moves his eyebrow, the entire universe is destroyed, including Brahma Loka. My residence. There's nothing I can do for you. It seemed from this story, between the lines, that Brahma did not want to be implicated in this Durvas Muni's offense to a devotee. So there's nothing I or Shiva or anyone can do for you, because the Lord is all powerful. So Durvas Muni, feeling the heat of Sudarshan behind him, he ran through the sky to Kailash, where he fell at the feet of Lord Shiva and begged Shiva to protect him. Vaishnavanam yata shambhu. Shiva's a great... Brahma and Shiva are both acharyas, founder acharyas of two sampradayas. Brahma Sampradaya, the Rudra Sampradaya. Shiva told him that all the demigods, everyone, we are all subordinate to Vishnu. But I can tell you how to save yourself. No matter where you go, there'll be no protection. You must go to Vishnu himself and surrender your body, mind, words, and life to him. So Dravasmuni went to Vaikuntha. This is what kind of runner he was. And there he fell at the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu and prayed, "Please, I beg forgiveness for my offense. Save me." And Vishnu spoke words that have echoed in the hearts of devotees for thousands and thousands of years. We're in this situation very lovingly. The Supreme Personality of Godhead revealed his heart out of mercy to Durvasa Muni. The Lord said, "I, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, am completely controlled by the love of my devotees. Although I am the supreme, absolute, independent Lord of all that exists, I have given up my independence by my own independent will to be controlled by the love of my devotee. And what to speak of my devotees? I am conquered and controlled even by the devotee servants of my devotees. The servant of the servant of my servants." He explains how my devotees, they have given up everything for me. Therefore, it's impossible for me to give up them. They carry me in the core of their hearts, and everything they do is for my pleasure. They are so satisfied with serving me that they do not want even liberation. Even the four types of liberation, of living in my abode, having my same kind of forms, having my same kind of qualities, being a personal associate, what to speak of mukti, or entering into the supreme Brahman, no more suffering. So my devotees don't care for any type of liberation because they're so satisfied just in making me happy by serving me. Just like a perfectly chaste wife brings her husband under control. Similarly, my devotees, who are equal and compassionate to every living being, have brought me under their control. And here, our beloved Gurudev Srila Prabhupada explains, this is the quality that the Lord loves so much about a devotee. Pandita Samadarshana, is they see every living being with equal vision. When we realize our love for God within our heart, we see that the Lord is within the heart of everyone. We see that every living being is a part of God, is a child of God, is a beloved of God. And therefore, to honor all respect and to be in a spirit of the Lord's compassion toward other living beings, that spirit is so dear to Krishna that he is controlled. The spirit of compassion. Sadavo hridayam mayam. The Lord said that I am always in the core of the heart of my devotee. They're always meditating, always praying to me with love. And therefore, the devotee is always in the core of my heart. And because a devotee is willing to do anything for me, I am willing to do anything for my devotee. And because a devotee cannot live without me, I cannot live without my devotee. Even my spiritual world, with all of my own transcendental bliss, Satchidananda, and all of my opulences, I cannot enjoy any of it without the loving association of my devotees. Durvasa Muni, because of your self-envy, you have mistreated and offended Ambarish, who is my dearmost devotee. Interesting how the Lord explains it as self-envy. From a material perspective, Durvasa Muni was very selfish. He was thinking, because Ambarish minimize me, I must destroy him. He was envious toward Durvas. But the Lord explains, if you are envious of someone in this world, ultimately you're envious of your own self. That envy is going to destroy you. There's no worse quality that demeans the soul worse than envy. And envy toward the... when we envy a devotee, the Lord is explaining here to Durvas, because you envy and you try to cause harm, that means you envy me and try to cause harm to me. Because I am in the core of the heart of my devotee. And the devotee is in the core of my heart. So if you envy and offend my devotee, if you are envying and trying to cause harm to the very core of my heart, which is taken much more seriously than the body. Yes? On this human level, if someone hits your arm, that's an offense. But if someone shoots an arrow in the core of your heart, that's a much more serious offense, is it not? So if we offend the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then we're attacking his body. But if we offend his devotee, we're attacking the core of his heart. This is why Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained that offenses to devotees are the mad elephant offense. If we blaspheme the Lord, we're going to have to pay. But that's just a bodily offense to the Lord. But if we are envious toward a devotee who's seating in the court of the Lord's heart, the Lord is good. That's envy toward the heart of the Lord. Therefore, he said, I have no power to protect you, because I'm under the control of my devotee, and you've offended him. Your only salvation is if you go and surrender at the feet of Ambarish Maharaj. This was the Lord's mercy, to show the world this profound lesson. So Durvasa Muni, he ran through the sky all the way back to Vrindavan, Madhuban forest. And Ambarish Maharaj was standing there waiting. Durvasa Muni fell at his feet. And Ambarish Maharaj was so embarrassed because he considered Durvas Muni a great yogi and a great sage and a great Brahmin, and he's just a little king householder, so he offers obeisances to Ambarish, and Ambarish offers obeisances to him, and Durvas Muni is falling at his feet, and Ambarish sees the Sudarshan Chakra right behind him, still. So what did Ambarish Maharaj do? With folded hands from the core of his heart, he offered prayers to the Sudarshan Chakra, the energy of Vishnu. After glorifying Sudarshan as the Lord's energy manifesting from the glance of the Lord, which is the cause of the creation and destruction of the entire cosmic manifestation and all its universes, that's the power Sudarshan has. After humbling himself before the greatness of the Lord and his astra, Ambarish Maharaj, with so much sincerity and emotion, he prays, "If myself or any of my family members have any ever done anything to please you, my Lord, the only thing I ask in return is don't hurt Durvas Muni. Forgive him." He prayed over and over again, "I don't ask any other benediction from you. Please protect Durvasa. Do not hurt him. Forgive him." Now, Durvas Muni is watching all this. Very dynamic situation. Let's compare the two with all due respect to both. Ambarish wanted to feed a beautiful feast to Durvas Muni. He gave him a beautiful seat. He bowed down to him. But just to break a fast with the permission of Brahmins, he drank a little water. And Durvas was so angry he wanted to kill him. And he tried. He did everything within his power. And here's Ambarish. Durvas Muni tried to kill him in the most horrible way, to burning him to death for doing nothing wrong. And Ambarish is begging and praying and willing to sacrifice all the spiritual credits he's ever had to protect and forgive Durvasa. This was really a very powerful Srimad Bhagavatam class for Durvasa Muni. With a very burning realization. And he was in rapt attention too. And Sudarshan Chakra disappeared. At that point, Durvas Muni is offering this verse that we read today to Ambarish Maharaj. Durvas Muni says, "My dear king, today I have experienced the greatness of devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For although I have committed an offense, you prayed for my good fortune. For those who have achieved the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Master of the pure devotees, what is impossible to do? And what is impossible to give up? What is impossible for the servants of the Lord? By the very hearing of his holy names, one is purified." O King, overlooking my offenses, you have saved my life. Thus I am very much obliged to you because you are so merciful. Please listen carefully. Durvasa Muni is one of the most powerful mystic yogis who has all supernatural powers. And here he is so obliged to Ambarish Maharaj, who's just living like a simple householder as a king. Durvasa Muni wants to repay, to show his gratitude to Ambarish for his incredible character of forgiveness. And he asks Ambarish, I want to give you any benediction you desire, anything. He has Prapti Siddhi. He could create anything and everything just by chanting a mantra. He could give him health. He could give him long life, anything. I'll give you any benediction you want. Ask. Ambarish asked for one benediction. He said, you've been traveling around for 1 year. And I haven't fed you yet. You must be very hungry. The only benediction I ask of you is sit down and let me serve you a sumptuous feast and enjoy it. Durvasa Muni, conquered by he who conquers the absolute truth, sat down. And Ambarish, with his own loving hands and with such an affectionate heart, just sumptuously fed Durvasa Muni prasad. And Durvasa Muni enjoyed it so much. And then Durvasa Muni understood that Ambarish, you fasted for a year. Doing Dwadasi and Ekadasi fasts and for 3 nights in a row. And I came and you just broke your fast with a little tiny bit of water. And Ambarish Maharaj, the whole year that Durvasa Muni was running from place to place into caves and on top of mountains and in the bottom of oceans and in Brahmaloka and Shivaloka and Vaikunthaloka, when he finally came back, it was a year later, and that whole year Ambarish just stood waiting for his guest to return. And he didn't eat anything. He only drank some water. And when Durvasa Muni was finally fed and completely satisfied, then Durvasa Muni said to Ambarish, now please, the only benediction I want from you is eat. Sit down and eat finally. So Durvasa Muni, Ambarish Maharaj honored prasad. And Durvasa Muni left, and wherever he went, he was chanting the glories of bhakti, of pure devotional service, the power of pure devotion, the beauty of pure devotion. And from these stories, we understand the characteristics that we must strive to cultivate if we actually want to please the Lord. The Lord teaches the world through the devotees. Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita how to please him. Yat karoshi yarashnasi yaj johoshi tadasi yat yatapasya sikunti yat tat kurusham adharaparam. All that you do, all that you offer and give away, all that you, the charities or austerities you perform, should be done as an offering to me. Patram pushpam palam toyam. Even a fruit or a leaf or a flower or some water, if it's offered with devotion, bhakti, I will be satisfied. Sarva dharman purityaja mam ekam sharanam braja. Aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha isamimasucha. Abandon all varieties of dharma and just surrender to me, sharanagati. And I shall deliver you from all sinful reactions. What's so interesting, the Lord says it, but Srimad Bhagavatam, the Lord reveals through the lives of saints like Ambarish how, what surrender actually means. To to truly be everyone's well-wisher, to have no envy in the heart. Even under the most difficult circumstances, it is natural for us. We're trying to be sincere, but sometimes situations just seem so impossible. I can't maintain the standards in this environment. This is too much. When I took my vows, I was not expecting this to happen to me. It's one thing, you know, going to Srimad Bhagavatam, but it's another thing when Durvasa Muni's throwing fiery demons on you. So we're tested in so many ways. But when we really understand the qualities of such devotees, we understand that it's the time when we're tested that the Lord actually understands and receives our love. Srila Prabhupada writes that one's greatness has to be estimated by the ability to tolerate provoking situations. And tolerating doesn't just mean surviving. It means forgiving. It means sustaining our integrity. It means with a grateful heart, taking shelter of the Lord as everyone's well-wisher. That's what toleration means in the path of bhakti. Haridas Thakur was beaten in 22 marketplaces. And the very people that beat him, he was praying to the Lord to give them love of God. And then after he was thrown in a river like a piece of trash, they thought he was dead. When he came back to life, what did he do? He walked right back to the king who sentenced him to death to give him another chance to understand Krishna's love. There was no envy. This may seem impossible for us, but by reading Srimad Bhagavatam and Mahajano Yena Gatasa Panta, trying to follow in the footsteps in whatever little tiny small way we can in our life, and chanting the holy names of the Lord, if we really want to be like Ambarish Maharaj and we really sincerely try and chant the names with that spirit, then Krishna can empower us to rise above envy and live with purity and devotion and love. Ambarish, he ruled his kingdom in such a way, he treated everybody like this, respectively. He was the servant of all. And therefore the kingdom was so happy. Yad yad acharati sreshthas tatat evetarojana. Krishna tells in Gita, what leaders do, the common people follow. The standards they set is what the world will pursue. If leaders are greedy for power, the general people will accept that as the standard. If leaders are loving and compassionate, that will be the standard. And everyone is meant to be a leader in their own field. Whether it's a political leader, a teacher is a leader, a parent is a leader, a friend could be a leader, a guru is a leader. Whatever position we may be in, a teacher, academic teacher, spiritual teacher, we're all meant to set the standard by our example. And here's the standard. Ambarish, Prahlad, Dhruva, in his enlightened state, the residents of Vrindavan, the great acharyas like Srila Prabhupada, following in their footsteps. That's real wealth. So because Ambarish exemplified such a standard of selfless love, everyone in the kingdom was devotees of Krishna. And everyone in the kingdom was so happy just serving Krishna. Some Sudhir Haritoshana making Krishna happy that they didn't want anything else. Practically nobody fought with each other because everyone was happy with what they had, Krishna. And it is explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam that no one had any desire to go to heavenly planets. No one had any desire for liberation. Even though living in this world, you know, usually we hear from religious people that the goal of life is to get out of this miserable world. Abrahma bhavana loka punaravartanorjana mamupe chitukontaya punarajanmana vidyate. From the highest planet in this material existence down to the lowest, there are places of misery where birth and death take place. But then Krishna says, but one who attains my abode is happy and never takes birth again. And Srila Prabhupada and Srimad Bhagavatam, in this story we learn that when devotees together are in this mood, then even in this world we attain the abode of the Lord. Because the abode of the Lord is within our heart. Incredible. The whole kingdom of the whole world, nobody did any rituals to attain Swargaloka. Nobody did any rituals to attain mukti. Why? Because they were totally satisfied just being with their king, Ambarish Maharaj, serving God, Krishna, serving each other, and chanting the holy name. And Durvas Muni, the culmination of his realization after all this incredible purification, was that simply by chanting the Lord's names, one is purified. And therefore, nothing is impossible when the Lord protects his devotee. For this priceless, matchless gift, we offer our gratitude to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you very much. Yes.